everybody, and welcome. Welcome to the Words, Women and Wisdom radio show, streaming live on BBS from California and also coming up on the new Podopolo podcasting platform, a social interactive podcasting platform that's spreading great messages. If you haven't listened to the Words, Women and Wisdom show before, I'm your host, Yvonne E.L. Silva, and my mission is uplifting the spirit of humanity. So I'm delighted to have a with me today who is working in that space of humanity. So hello, Serena, how are you?
Hello, Yvonne. I am well, thank you. And I'm just really excited to be here, that you would interview me, you would share, you know, my story with your audience, and that together we can hopefully inspire others, especially women. And your title alone, Woman in Wisdom, that says it all to me. Like every single day I start my mornings off or my days off or my groups off with words of wisdom.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I love the title.
Well, the title of the show came about from my best-selling book, Words, Women and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations, which hit as a bestseller overnight, November 1st, 2018. And after that, I rebranded and started operating under the name of Women and Wisdom Media. So this show is one of those media outlets to share information along with the book, along with my mentoring and coaching programs, and also the radio show and podcast, because I love sharing messages, important positive messages. Sometimes it's the insight of hearing someone's story, and mostly what I'm interviewing for my show is guests who are female entrepreneurs, most of which have risen from some sort of tragedy to triumph and now are up to amazing things globally. And my approach is to share those stories. So if you are listening and you're feeling like, I don't know if I can carry on with what I'm doing right now, I'm not inspired, I need a little bit of motivation, this is the place to be. My role is to share the messaging and also working with social enterprise, mission-inspired entrepreneurial women, particularly those successful women who have a successful business, and sometimes it's lacking the joy and the purpose, and sometimes it's about the business running them and no time for family. So we got to change that up, because every woman deserves to have the balance of both. So that's what this show is all about. So I'm glad that you could join me, Serena. I was introduced to Serena through a lovely friend of mine, Patricia Gagich, and she is just such a gem. I love that lady.
Yeah. And she's our chief visionary officer here at Help Heal Humanity.
Yes, and I was going to say, she's on your board as well, isn't she?
Yes, she is. Yeah. She is.
And if you haven't heard of Serena before, I would be surprised, but here we go. Serena Buffalino is a force of nature, and I've read the bio. I have to agree with that statement. She's rooted in service to others and hauls herself, I love this, over every obstacle using the pittance of hard work, dedication, and determination. And she's going to share her story today about what began as a career as a teacher under the Toronto at Youth program, Section 23 program, which has now evolved into what could only be described as a lifetime of service work, empowering and inspiring people across the globe, teaching in detention centers, in mental health hospitals, group homes. I'm going to ask you to talk a little bit in a few minutes about the Haiti school building project, because that's obviously a massive project for third world awareness and a lot of raising of funds for a school in Canaan in Haiti. Also, though, talking about some of your credentials, because you've won lots of awards. McMaster University Alumni Tech Award, no, sorry, Alumni Arch Award, the Excellence 2017 Award for Teaching from the Toronto District School Board, nominated for one of the top 100 teachers in Canada by Toronto Star. Oh, there's so many awards here. Ontario Heart Award, Toronto's Best Influencers, third overall in Toronto for more than community service hours, more community service hours than any other volunteer in the GTA. I mean, that speaks volumes. So today in our interview, we're going to talk about How Serena came up with this title of "In Helping Others, We Help Ourselves." So tell me, how did this passion for service get started? Was that something that you always did as a young kid, or how did it get going?
No, how it started actually was I was a special education student myself. So I was born into a family of unconditional love, but they were immigrants, so they didn't speak or write in English. So all the communications within my household were Italian. And then when I went to school, it was different learning in English, but then I didn't have anybody to help me with reading and writing. And I realized at a very young age, I was falling through the cracks with my reading and writing. And the teachers were noticing that. And so I spent a majority of my adolescence in special education classrooms and/or being sent to the principal's office because I was misbehaving because I didn't want my peers to see that I was not able to do what the teacher was asking me to do. So I would redirect the energy on, doing something inappropriate so it would take away from the actual act. And so that was basically what had happened to me was I looked smart and I acted smart and, I was very social. And that to me is one of the biggest things is my intuition. And I always knew that there was something in me, but I couldn't meet the credentials of what the academic program were asking for. So I was seen as, especially at that time, as, not being able to amount to much. So I was always told that I was different and that I wouldn't measure up to the success of my peers because of my learning disabilities. Right?
And of course, now you've gone on to become, do you hold the title of CEO
Yes.
for Help Heal Humanity?
Well, that's
Massive,
it.
massive job.
I remember spending all my time in the principal's office, and I remember one day very clearly my principal who believed in me. So he was part of my success story because I spent so much time in his office. And he said to me one day, he's like, "You're going to become what you hate." And I was like, "Absolutely not, sir." I'm like, "That would be a teacher or a police officer." Right? And when you fast forward, or sorry, rewind 20 years later, my very first career was a special education specialist working in jail. So it was like I took the two things that were not serving me, the things that were really causing a lot of hurt and pain in my life, and transformed them into becoming the teacher I always wish I had. And becoming the person that I always felt would take the time to help me be a better person so that I could overcome all these obstacles,
Yeah,
right?
and I very often find that that is a common thread with the women that I'm interviewing, is the reason they're doing what they're doing is because it's so impactful and so meaningful and so purposeful for them because they've been through it themselves.
Yes.
So I'll share a little bit of my story later on too, and why I do the work that I do. It's so important though to really be able to teach it from a place of understanding. And you've been through it, you understand it, you understand the frustrations, as you say, the teacher you wished you had and didn't have.
Yeah.
So awesome that you're
And
doing.
that's what the ultimate goal was, and at that time when you're 10 or 13 or 16, you don't realize, you kind of you don't have the self-esteem or the self-worth because everyone's telling you you're kind of, you're stupid. And so that can really, hurt you, but I did always have this infinite belief in myself. I didn't know how it would manifest. And so that was my inner guide that I trusted. And I'm grateful for that. But again, that was the main purpose is to become a role model, to say, "I've been there, I've done that, I've suffered in the same way that you suffered, and look at me. I was able to do it, and if I can do it, so can you." And then, start to, st well, first, the connection is the most important part because you're dealing with the hardest to serve people, youth, and communities. Most of society has always turned them away. They don't really have a trust in, you know, humanity anymore, or in the systems, or into the services. So my immediate thing is building on that human connection and building that trust, because without that spirit and that exchange, nothing else is going to be successful.
Yeah,
so
I was going to start. I was going to say, you know, where do you start with that? I mean, I have a special needs son who is, you know, developmental delays. And
yes.
So it wasn't that he was acting up. He was just missing parts of his brain that allowed him to do all the things that your average kid does. And
yes.
So he wasn't going as fast. People couldn't understand his speech. So I understand a little bit of what your journey has been, obviously not from your perspective though. So what else do you do differently when you're working with that very special group?
Oh, well, it's there's so many different things. And that's what I would say, like, when I had to take a leave of absence, or when I was away, when there was a supply teacher or they were trying to find people to replace me, there was always extreme difficulties. And all the books were there and all the lesson plans were there and all the agenda was there. But ultimately, what has kept me so in tune with my students or my communities is that internal connection, that love and that spirit. And that's what I mean. For me, it's getting to the core of people. And I think people, you know, that's what I believe is one of my gifts. I think people generally can understand that I have nothing to gain out of this, you know, and that my only purpose is to make them understand that they're not alone and that I'm here to help. And no matter what they have done or gone through or are going through, it's okay. You know, it's okay. I'm never saying like, you didn't do this right, you didn't do this right, or, you know, you can't do this, or you can't be that. It's accepting the human that they are always,
yeah.
Not the human we want them to be or the human we expect them to be, but actually accepting them who they are, how they are, and even in their most difficult of times, and letting them know that that's okay.
Yeah, I remember last year, was it last year or the year before? It was last year, in the just before COVID hit and everything shut down, attending a session. It was one of the Bell Let's Talk days. Connie Jacob here in Calgary, who does a lot of work around mental health, talking about her experience with her son who was acting up because of his personality, and the concept of, you know, don't send them to the room, but bring them closer, is what she talked about in her talk. And it just resonates so much. And in what you just shared too, don't,
yeah,
you know, criticize them for who they are,
no,
but love them, hold space for them, let them know that you trust them and will do anything to help them get their wings from underneath them and step out. So,
and that's exactly how it works. You know, like, there were times where, you know, I spent 15 years working with the hardest to serve youth in the city of Toronto, you know, and when I was working in the jails, for example, I was working with the murderers, the rapists, the pedophiles. If I didn't see them for the good in them, there was no way that they were going to believe in me to be able to help them either,
right?
Right? So it was building that connection and building that bond. And then mental health, that's what I, you know, at the end of the day, whether you're thriving and excelling or you're really suffering and declining, that all comes back to your mental health and your mental state, right?
Yeah.
So you have to understand the way somebody thinks. And once you start to understand the way they think and where the behaviors are coming from or where the concept of their behaviors are coming from, then you can start to tailor. Right. So, I mean, eventually it would get to the point where every single one of my students, and again, by law, I was only allowed to have 15 kids, 1-5, in my classroom, because, again, they were the hardest to serve youth.
Right.
And you imagine they were so different. You know, I had, at one point I had, you know, Bloods and Crips gang members in my, under the same roof in the same classroom that literally have killed each other. Their crews and their gangs have killed each other, so they're ready to kill each other. And then you have an autistic class, an autistic kid in there, as well as severe mental health, bipolar, schizophrenic. And then you have, you know, severe cases of trauma, abuse, and neglect. So you have 15 very different youth all going through very different situations that are very real. And being able to have that all under one roof and keep everything under control. So I got to know my students so well that on everyone's desk, there was their triggers on one side and then their coping mechanisms on the other. And I always say I am the teacher who doesn't believe in academics, because academics didn't serve me well. Academics is what I needed to do to get through the system. But my whole thing is focusing on how to be human, focusing on life skills, social skills, how to be okay when we're not okay, and how to understand our behaviors that are not causing us success in our life and be able to start to manipulate that and change that into a success. And so that's what I would say to my kids is, I instantly, figure out what their struggles and triggers are, and then I'd figure it out what are the things that they love. And I would start to identify their behavior. So I'd start snapping and be like, look, you're about to have, an explosion or a trigger right now, and you're about to de-escalate. So look at your coping skills and go and do one of them, and try and slowly getting them out of the system. In the beginning, it was almost impossible because their only true nature, because of the environment in which they were brought up in and what their normal is to punch, fight, kick, scream. They don't know anything else. So you have to start to let them know that that's not okay. And when that is happening, we need to start to do these things. And in the beginning, it was so hard because they just wanted to fight and punch and scream. And I'm like, no. Go to the gym. Go shoot some hoops. Go in the timeout room. Listen to music. Go outside. Go for a walk and start catching them and making them go and do something different. And it would get to the point where, I didn't even have to nip it in the bud anymore, where they'd be like, Miss, this is happening and I need to go and do this. And that's for me was, the greatest gift of putting in all this time and energy is to start to watch them transform. And as soon as they start to get those little bits of light, it starts to motivate them. It inspires them. It builds their self-esteem. It builds their self-worth. And all of a sudden, they overcome one little obstacle. And that's not just the youth. That's everybody in life. That's what I've come to learn through my teaching experience. It doesn't matter who or what your circumstance is. It's learning how to overcome that. And when you start to take the little steps and you start to see the success of those steps, that's when the true magic starts to happen. And I'd have those really miserable kids that didn't believe in the concept of what we were doing. And I used to say to them, that's fine. You need to be here still. So just sit in the back and be miserable and don't ruin it for us in the front. And the fact that they were allowed to just sit there and be miserable or listen to their music and not pay attention, but then they would start to see their peers and it improving their peers. Those really tough kids all of a sudden were like, maybe I want to try this, and again, letting them come in on the time that they're ready and not pushing them. And it's just really being that support for them. So that's kind of how it all began. And then, I didn't really realize that I could actually impact these youth. And when I started to see the success and I started to see it, it became an addiction. I just wanted to start to, help as many people as we could. And it's continually snowballed, right?
Well, it's oxytocin, right, that gets triggered with that feel-good hormone. It's the same thing in coaching. When I see their light, the light go on, their aha moment, and they've turned a corner because they've solved their own problem, it's a magical thing. And then you co-create something better together, and it can feel like a drug. It can feel like a drug. And helping people, I mean, that's the title of our conversation today. In helping others, we help ourselves. And that is so rewarding. And I think that's why so many women in particular are drawn to the teaching professions,
Well,
and to the coaching profession.
and this is what actually ended up becoming the building blocks to the charity, which was never an intention. I never ever dreamed of having a charity and running the way we are operating right now with education and nourishment and all of that. But what I saw was what was lacking in terms of these kids needed the social skills and the life skills, and they're human just like everybody else. And what they hoped for in their lifetime was the possibility of getting, you know, just a job and being able to take care of themselves. So what I did, and again, not knowing, was bring the kids out into the community. So what we did was my program was a maximum of 2 years. And what the concept was in addition to teaching the life skills and the social skills and the coping mechanisms, was to go out into the community and build them up a resume. And build them up a resume that had 3 volunteer experiences with references. Right. And that's how we ended up going out to 3 days a week. My students and I were going to homeless shelters. We were going to women's shelters. We were going to, like, you know, different kind of organizations like Free the Children or Red Cross and or Value Village. And some of them would be shelving the stocks. Some of them would be doing the mailing, like mailing out tax receipts. All of us would be feeding the homeless. And we would go in the morning. It's a full industrial kitchen. We would prepare the meals, and then we would prepare them for a couple hours. And then in the afternoon, we would serve them. And my students actually would go from table to table, serving the coffee, giving the meal, cleaning it up. So they started learning through experience how to do these things. And that's, again, in helping, the concept was just to try to teach them how to be better humans. But as they were in the community being of service, we were actually impacting our community and people were receiving our gifts. And so it became a win-win situation where my kids, my students, they were starting to, you know, get confident and realize that they were capable, and that here we are, kids, some of the most at-risk kids in the city, who all of a sudden we have purpose. And when you have purpose, you have life.
Powerful, isn't it? So powerful.
Yeah. And that's, you know, and that's what I feel like so many people are missing, is when you are doing something for the greater good of others, when you have a purpose and a meaning and you just follow that, that is going to change the world.
Yeah. And I think that's why, excuse me, partly why Viktor Frankl's book is quoted so often, you know, Man's Search for Meaning. And one of his big 3 things was, you know, when you have a goal or a vision, or you're working on something that is bigger than just you, it's bigger than just making money, it's, you know, impacting a wider audience, that will pull you forward into this purposeful life. And when you have that, it just nourishes your soul. I mean, that's the only way I can explain it. So with Help Heal Humanity, for people that aren't familiar with the organization, how do you sum up what it's about?
So Help Heal Humanity is an international charity that's based on education and nourishment. So we are empowering and inspiring youth. Sometimes we are just running educational programs. You know, the Haiti School Building Project, we actually built the school and, you know, do all the sponsorship and pay the teachers and the salaries. You know, we have a Cambodia project where it's, you know, life skills and social skills. So we're running education programs. We are building kids' confidence. We are definitely providing nourishment, because even in all of these places, Canada, US, Spain, Haiti, Cambodia, anywhere, so many of these people are starving. They can't even get a meal in their belly. So
concentrate when you have no food in, no nourishment. How many people or students are you serving currently globally?
There's 125 kids in our sponsorship program currently in Haiti, but then we have almost 50 kids in our after school social skills program in Cambodia. However, we run youth engagement programs, and with the youth engagement programs, that's impacting, you know, thousands of kids, you know, over the March break, which is now extended into the April break. Yeah. We will be running programs like a March break kind of programming where kids will sign up and receive our, our motivational talks and our, and our youth engagement programs. So we never really know how many people we're impacting, but because of the different people that are coming from different schools, and we do have numbers of the kids that are registered for the youth engagement programs, and the youth engagement programs are based on schools and countries, but the actual sponsorship program is what we have going on in Haiti, which, like, again, is about 125 students, and then what we have going on in Cambodia.
Well,
So
look at your own personal experience, and when you had somebody who believed in you, what happened, and how many lives you're now touching. I know for myself, I had somebody pop up on Facebook just recently, and they said, "Oh, you're Yvonne Silva. You're the author for Words, Women, and Wisdom." I had that book on the nightstand in my shelter, and now I'm actually about to launch my first book, and I've got my e-course coming out. And I was like, "Whoa!" Now, how much of an impact did my book make when she was down and out, in a shelter situation? Because what I do is buy one, give one. So for every copy of the book that's purchased, donate one to a women's shelter foundation or not-for-profit. So I never know where they're ending up. But it just gave me goosebumps listening to her talking and thinking, if I only impacted one person, that would be great. But I know it's impacting a lot more than that because I know how many books I've given away.
And that's exactly it. With our meal programs right now, we are putting 500 meals a week in our local community, and so we're impacting people through nutrition, but in terms of, like I said, education and nutrition are our main areas. How we get the funding to do that runs through 10 different pillars. So
Okay, tell me more about that.
we have yoga for humanity, we have travel for humanity, we have sports for humanity, business for humanity, dining for humanity, food for humanity, artists for humanity, education for humanity, and each one of our pillars is catering to various people and what they excel at. So if you have a business, we want to collaborate with you so that Help Heal Humanity can be your charity of choice. And together we raise funds and put it towards education program or a meal program that you're passionate about. So, under Artists for Humanity, for example, I met an artist in New York City. She was very passionate about what we were doing. She has, because of COVID, we haven't gone forward. But after our interview, very similar to this, she said she always had a dream. She was born and raised in Colombia, and she remembers on every Sunday they used to go to the orphanages and feed the kids. And she's always had a dream to go back to those kind of orphanages and feed the kids. So I said to her, well, why don't we put together like an art exhibition with all the proceeds supporting a meal program in Colombia? And she's like, is that possible? And I'm like, that's 100% possible, because that's what Help Heal Humanity can do. We can be the caveat between what you hope to see in the world, and then we, collaborate to bring that into the world. And that's what I mean. So for the business people, it's that. For the sports, I'm so pleased to say that we've had a couple really big sports donations from various soccer leagues or from the Special Olympics, where we are now putting together an all-girls soccer league, and we hope to have one in Costa Rica, in Kenya, in Haiti, and possibly Nicaragua, right? And that's because people have donated sporting equipment to us, and now we know, women are not being served in these countries, especially young kids in the community. They can't participate in sports because they're females, and it's only a male-oriented, country and or league. So we are providing these for the girls, and we know that sports can change a life. So the athletes contribute to the sports for humanity. The artists do the art. Again, the businesses collaborate with us. The dining for humanity is various restaurants. If you own a restaurant, if you're a chef, Can you make the meals for one of our feeding programs, or can we host a big event at your restaurant so that we can raise funds for our program? Mm-hmm. And that's it. It's basically, if you go to our website, no matter who you are, you have a gift, and we all have that gift. And hopefully everybody knows what their gift is in the world. And we're asking people to donate that gift back to humanity, right? So if everybody just did that, you know, that in itself would change the world.
Excellent. So I'll repeat it again at the end, but for those who are listening and just have a spark of an idea right now, it's helphealhumanity.org. is the website. So let's talk about some of the lessons that you've learned along the way, because obviously I love talking with women who are leaders, whether they consider themselves by title a leader or whether they are making such a massive contribution that clearly they're bringing forward their influence to have a voice and to involve and engage and inspire others to follow them, which is the obviously the essence of leadership. So tell me about some of the things that you have learned along the way, maybe four or five key insights that help you to be the powerful influencer that you are today, who is stepping up for some of these amazing and very large humanitarian projects.
First and foremost, I would say the number one thing is knowing that challenges are the best way we learn. So I can say, I probably did it wrong the first time, and I make mistakes constantly, but I see every mistake because of the way I've trained my mind and my brain and my mental health. I see mistakes, challenges, and obstacles as opportunity for success.
Absolutely.
So instantly, when something is done wrong, no matter how much time was put into it, it's okay, well, we know what not to do, and we take a different approach. So just knowing that your failures are actually part of your success, and that is the best way we learn, is key. Because without that, I mean, I would have fallen a long time ago. I think the other thing is the resilience, the drive. If I listened to the number of people who told me that I was never going to be successful at doing some of the things that I have accomplished, then I would have thrown in the towel so long ago. And that's part of what the intuition and that sixth sense is I know that I've been put on this earth to do the hard work. But that's the work that I hope to bring into the world. And you know, being a humanitarian is not actually an easy job. You're working with, you know, the hardest to serve people and communities, and you're dealing with different cultures and nationalities and ways of being, and how to come together and make that work is extremely challenging. But you have to believe in what you're doing. So I believe in it so much that nothing can bring me down. My spirit is always determined to figure it out. Resilience for me, wow. You know, how many times I've been kicked down to the ground and I'm like, let's go. I got this, you know? And I think it's in overcoming all of the challenges that everybody told me I couldn't do, continuously builds me up to say, watch me do it, you know? And I'm never saying watch me do it or any of that stuff, I think, from a place of ego or pride, which is why I tend to be successful, because there is a higher power, there is a higher source, there is a God, universe, whatever you may call it, that I believe is watching our actions. And those people or that world sees that my intentions are true and that I will get what I need in the time that I need it in order to be successful. Now, my patience sometimes is not the greatest, but I do believe always in the desired outcome and doing whatever it takes to reach that outcome.
Yeah. Right? I think one of the most powerful words in the English language is how. So it's not whether or not something's going to happen. It's just a matter of, you know, how are we going to navigate around that boulder, or how are we going to cross that big chasm? And it's interesting that you chose those very words about never succeeding, because that's part of my journey and part of the reason I wrote the book, is to do with my dad, who came back from World War II, took a bullet in Dunkirk, grazed him, and he came back with PTSD. And net result was that he was a very, very mean, angry man. And when I flunked an exam at age 11, this was a series of things that happened before then, but that's one particular memorable thing. He literally screamed at me that I would never, ever be successful in life. And I carried that like a shield, like I couldn't believe, first of all, that someone who's supposed to love me had said that. But I carried that shield for about 45 years. And finally realized that it was actually keeping, instead of protecting me from negative language and words and thoughts from others, it was actually keeping me small behind the shield. And so the book is actually dedicated to my mom, who literally I watched having the life and the dignity drained right out of her by him when they were married. He took her power away. And so I hear you, and I echo everything that you're saying. This whole piece about mistakes, I wrote about it in my book as well. And I consider that those are not mistakes. They're actually lessons and learning opportunities, much as the same way you do, just slightly different language. So
Yeah, and
overcoming
I can
my
relate to
fears.
you also with the family. My dad suffered a severe head injury, and just overnight, he became a completely different man. And he was like the kindest, most giving, loving, nurturing kind of human. And then he turned into a very angry, angry person. And again, I watched my mom deal with that. And it's again, I think you're a product of your environment, you're a product of your circumstances, and what you see, it can either break you or it can, lift you up and rise you up. And that's what it is learning that all of these things, I think it was watching the mental health breakdown in my family with my father and my sister, and watching my mom, try to mask the mental health with love. And then I kind of said, okay, well, there's mental health, there's love, but there's got to be something more. So that's why, I became that teacher who focused on mental health and try to do that through love. And, at that time when you were watching your dad being somewhat abusive to your mom, I'm sure you just wanted to hurt your father and feel sorry for your mom. But again, that built you up to be the woman that you are today, right?
Well, it's interesting. I caught myself the other day getting ready for an interview and putting my lipstick on, which is a key part of the cover of my book, right?
Yes.
Because my mom always used to wear this bright red lipstick, and it was kind of like, as long as she had as long as she had a lipstick and a powder, she could face the world and she was safe. Although she really wasn't at home, so it's interesting how we always say, we don't want to be like our parents, and yeah, and then we end up,
Yeah.
that's what we grew up with, that's what we know, right?
Well, that's true too, right? And so, and again, I'm sure there was times in our lives where we didn't choose the wisest, best partners because it was what we saw growing up too. And again, any of these experiences, which are the experiences that I think a lot of women face, is, times were different back then. Men were known as, the providers and the people who ruled the house, and you basically did everything dad said or the husband said. Well, times are shifting and times are changing, and women are going to work, and women are raising the bar, and women are calling the shots. And so that's like a big, clash that, us women are starting to experience that, and there's still so many women going through it. And so that's why we use our voice and our platforms is to help the women who are going through the situations we've gone through, to let them know, it's going to change, and all of this is leading you to something else, and you have to just be open to that. And again, shifting the mental health around how we perceive situations.
And just knowing that, when you get those kind of comments now, that it's not okay. I mean, we
Yeah.
get it in the workplace where, men are still earning way more than women are in many situations, even despite having equal pay legislation.
Yep.
There are still situations where women, and I know this from working in senior HR roles for, almost 20 years and interviewing and hiring about 6,000 people in my career, that women generally don't speak up and then don't ask for the top of the range. Even if they know what the top of the range is, they don't start there. They feel like they've got to earn their way up. Well, no, if you don't ask at the pivotal time when you have the power over the conversation, which is when you're being offered the job, when you have that salary negotiation opportunity, take it. Because if you don't ask, guaranteed, you're not going to get it. And then once you're inside the organization, you have to demonstrate by proving yourself all the time. It's not women based on potential. It's women based on performance. That's how we get judged typically. And then we have to earn our way up. So a 2% increase is not going to build up very fast. So when you're taking the next job, ask for at least a $10,000 bump.
Yeah.
And it's not about, well, what did you earn in your last job?
I think so many of us stay quiet. And even for me as a young lady, I never asked for help when I was struggling, right? And I never asked for guidance because I didn't want to be seen as that girl. And it wasn't until I finally learned how to ask for help, and asking for help is actually a good thing, and or asking for what I need. How can people serve me if they don't know how to serve me or what I need? So, I mean, I definitely say I still have a lot to learn and a lot of areas to grow in. But yeah, that's exactly it. It's like you said, asking for what you need. And even during COVID right now, I think, the whole world has definitely been affected by COVID, but women have been affected by it significantly greater than men. And a lot of people don't talk about those facts and those numbers, you know, affordable housing, you know, daycare, work, you know, more women are getting laid off than men. More of the services are being, or the jobs are going to the men and not the women. And so women have always been kind of, not seen as great or at the same level as men, and as we're starting to get there, we're getting there, but there's still so much more to go. And during COVID specifically, women are being impacted greater with the losses than men, and that in itself is sad, because I think women, we are the future. I think we're the game changers, we're the leaders, we're the visionaries. I think, and I'm not speaking, you know, for all populations, but I do feel like, you know, we're a little bit more nurturing, we're kinder, and we're more caring. And so we're not thinking as much as about the pride or the money or the rewards, but more about the actual bigger picture, the bigger impact, which is why I think that women are the greatest leaders, because I think we think larger than much larger than ourselves or our work, right? Because
I totally agree with what you're saying. I actually wrote an article about women in leadership during COVID, which I think after this interview, I will republish that article on, have it on LinkedIn, because it's so timely and relevant to what you're saying. And definitely women have been impacted more, because at the end of the day, we're still the majority of the household. We make the purchasing decisions, we're looking after the elder care arrangements plus the childcare arrangements, you know, whether or not the kids are in school, all of those things typically tend to still fall on the women. And so we do have double duty. And part of one of the other organizations that I'm a member of, BPW, Business and Professional Women, they were able globally to do so many initiatives that helped women either stay working or get working or make sure that they were still being valued and being funded for things that they needed. It's just such important work. And then also talking about, you know, how do you keep your mind so strong? So do you have a daily practice or something that is a ritual? I know I have a ritual in the morning for keeping me grounded before the day starts.
Oh, 100%. You know, for me, I believe, the woman that I am because of my approach, my mental health, yoga. Yoga is a big, big part of my life. Meditation. I wake up every morning. I smudge, you know, I light my incense. I do my prayers, gratitude prayers. I mean, I'm so grateful for everything that, you know, even the bad stuff, that it's again, just being grateful to be alive, to have my breath, to be able to be here for one more day, even if it's an exceptionally hard day. And nature, I love nature. Like, I believe, I tell everyone, you know, meditation, yoga, gratitude, nature, those are some of the best healing modalities that have worked for me, you know, and they ground me and they keep me sane. I love spending, like, I also tell people I am like the most social introvert you'll ever meet, because I love being in a crowd and I know how to work a room, but I love my me time, and my me time is so important. And I can't really function without taking that time for myself to, again, keep that thought process of positivity, of gratefulness, of appreciation, and just constantly building myself up. I'm like, oh, there's all like sunshine and butterflies up in here. I don't want people to ruin that for me. So, and again, it's that, you know, I can't stress enough that sixth sense. I always say, like, even when I take on projects or when I'm feeding people or when we're running youth engagement programs, whatever it is something in me sees what is on an energetic, intuitive level. And, you know, I will never say yes to a project unless I go and feel the community, feel the people, feel the land, because I get the feelings from the energy. And that's my compass. That's my compass. There, sure, we have a business plan and we have, you know, strategic planning and we have missions and visions. But if I don't feel it, it's not going to work.
Yeah, totally. And that's part of an important part of the Flourish program that I operate, which is for my clients, which is about, you know, visualizing and then monetizing and then optimizing the business system so that it is something that's sustainable and that they can walk away from and still is making money. And at the same time is nourishing their soul, because that's kind of where we start. Like, what's the vision? What's the purpose? How does that connect to what you're passionate about? Yeah. And then build it out from there. Because otherwise, when you do have the rough days, and everybody has, you know, unexpected things that come up, that's just part of life's, you know, experience. We'd either be having, you know, the ups and the downs, and if we don't, we'd be flatlining.
Yeah, exactly. So,
it's about understanding, you know, what are some of the strategies that work for each individual that will snap you out of it quickly, so you don't take a massive dive down, but you stay acknowledging it, recognizing it's a learning opportunity, bouncing back quickly, and then stepping up and saying, okay, what's this here to teach me? And how quickly can I embrace that? And where's the good opportunity that comes out of it?
And that's exactly it. It's like, I actually also heard you speak on Christopher Rauch's platform. And it was, when I was listening to you speak on that platform, I was like, I feel like we speak the same language. Yeah. And sometimes that's a language that a lot of people don't know, because people haven't been taught to trust their intuition. People haven't been taught that there is something greater, like our energy and our resources. And that to me is really key. And if that's the one of the things that Help Heal Humanity can do, is teach people how to tap into their potential, mm-hmm. and actually not be afraid to go with that, that, you know, that will inspire them and make them happier beings than, you know, miserable in the things that they think they need to be doing. And that's why the title, in helping ourselves, we're helping others, because it all comes down to you. You know, it all comes down to how you think and how you feel and how you behave in the world. And if you have that under control, then you just want to, and if you feel good, and if you're loving life too, you just want everybody else to love life. You know, there is no room for jealousy, hate, or pain or suffering, because if you're a happy person, you don't want to be around that, and you don't want other people to be like sporting that. So that's why I say, in helping ourselves, we're really helping others, because when we're good, then we can be better for others.
Absolutely. So if you're listening and saying, you know, I'm really intrigued, I also have a passion for yoga or travel or sports, or my business could potentially be helping humanity in a new way with food or with art, you know, any of these types of projects, I encourage you to reach out through info@helphumanity.org to connect with Serena and her team. They're doing some amazing work globally. I mean, some of the numbers that you've mentioned of people that are being helped, it only takes one person to be able to then pass it on. And right. So that ripple is so, so powerful. I've seen it. I've experienced it. I know some of the people, you know, Christopher, Patricia, that you're surrounding yourself with. Huge, yeah. Huge hearts, brilliant minds, and amazing people. So I'm so glad that you were able to join me today on the show. Certainly look forward to the opportunity. If you're listening, please do go to helphealhumanity.org. Make a donation, connect with Serena, and thank you for joining me today.
Oh, thank you so much. I mean, I feel like we just touched upon some small things, but I feel like I could talk to you all day about all these different snippets of who we are and what makes us who we are. But I really appreciate for this opportunity. And yes, for any viewers out there, if you're stuck, if you're sad, if you're suffering, if you're excelling, no matter what situation you're in, reach out to us and let's collaborate and do something good together. Because I think when we do something good always comes back to us. And that's karma. So thank you again. Like, words of wisdom. I think I might have to come and talk to you about, you know, business women leadership, because I'm such a teacher and a caregiver and a nurturer that sometimes I do forget about the business aspect of stuff.
Well, let's have that future conversation and see what comes out of this episode, and then we'll go from there.
That sounds amazing.
Thank you again, Serena. We'll talk soon. Have a beautiful day.
Bye bye. Thank you.
Ladies, a new book is on the horizon. Words, Women, and Wisdom, the Modern Art of Confident Conversations. This new book is for women ready to rediscover their inner confidence, take a stand for themselves in life and business by using more powerful language. Words are so powerful and already changed history. On October 5th, The New York Times published a story detailing decades of allegations of sexual harassment against film producer Harvey Weinstein. And numerous women in the entertainment industry found the courage to go public, banding together with a powerful voice that change is long overdue. Even Oprah Winfrey, television network icon, gave a rousing speech at the Golden Globe Awards in January. The media has showcased the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund. The Me Too movement is flourishing and all signaling it's time for women's equality and change. I believe it's time to give women the verbal agility to create more confident conversations. Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations is the book which provides practical approaches for women to ask for what we really want and receive our request.
Hello, I'm Yvonne Silver, certified executive coach and senior HR professional, seasoned in business. I teach women to flourish in business by using more confident language to help empower and engage others. This book is the result of over 35 years of my career, professional career, working in four different countries. I've interviewed over 6,000 people in my career for job interviews, executive coaching, for sales and consulting conversations. And I've listened to hundreds of women in particular who are looking for a better way to collaborate. They're looking to be asking for what they really want and heard and validated, especially in business. And women often earn less than men for doing exactly the same job. It's 2018. It's time for change.
The Modern Art of Confident Conversations explores words we use at home, at work, words that trip us up, elevate us, and encourage us, and when no words are even required. It is about how to leverage the power of words in a positive, in a collaborative and impactful way. Now I work with women entrepreneurs and leaders who are empowering other women and leading through mentorship programs and my coaching, public speaking, interviews, and writing. I'm passionate about women's equality. Why? I grew up in England in a house with a flow of negative comments from my father, which destroyed my mum's dignity until she became an empty shell of the vibrant woman she'd once been, belittled by constant criticism and questioning of her abilities. Through my own life journey and supporting hundreds of female clients, I've discovered critical words to ask to get what we really want collaboratively. I know there are critical links between our language, our behavior, our mindset, and our success in life. Words from a song can replay in our head for hours, and poetry can bring a lump in our throats. I've combined my insights with interviews from influential women, sharing their pearls of wisdom, supplemented with research and reference studies from established scholars. Women are rising up. It's time for women to be heard. Let's use more powerful, positive language and join the rising tide of change. This book is for you, a woman looking to the future, ready to embrace significant positive changes in your life by using more confident language. Eliminate those words that drain your power, add words that energize and invigorate, and shift from ordinary to extraordinary. Just one word can change your life. I believe every woman needs their own copy of this powerful book. It's time for action and time for change. Order and reserve your own copy of Words, Women, and Wisdom today.